time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. Last Saturday, I caught up with the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Mark James and Di Stoddard from the Waiheke Library. But first I talked to Gulf Islands Councillor Denise Roach. Okay, you're on Waiheke Radio, Island Life, and I'm Chris, and I'm joined on the line by Denise Roach, our Auckland City Councillor. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Oh, well, not too bad, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, all right. I had an operation on Thursday, but I'm fine now.
Well, that doesn't sound too good. Hope you're all well.
Yeah, no, it's just gallstone, so, yeah, I'm on the mend now, it's fine.
Excellent. Now, it's been a busy time for Waiheke. In fact, it feels a little bit like it's been Bash Waiheke Month. How are you coping with all of that?
Actually, it's a relief to have gone to hospital. I agree with you entirely. It sort of has felt like it's been an uphill struggle. Certainly, the stuff around the waste issues and the 10-year plans, you know, with the council just not moving from its position about having the library and the service centre at one place has been a major battle, really. But anyway, I sort of feel like we can actually just sort of recharge ourselves and start another fight, because we've got the select committee hearing the stuff around the local governance issues for Auckland, and that gives us another opportunity and another arena to put the fight in, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of things going on, say, around the waste. We've got this idea of the judicial review. Now,
yep.
The community board have been looking into that and deciding whether or not they support that. Where's that up to?
Look, I've had 2 days off because I've been in hospital. So where it got to on Wednesday is that the community board was considering the options. Peter Rickies came with a couple of other people, Judith Daly and Millie Pickle from Waiheke Does It Better, came to have an informal meeting with the community board about this issue. And where we got to was to sort of actually consider whether we'll go get a legal opinion. And Tony Sears, our deputy chair, I believe, has also been seeking advice from the Community Boards Association, the chair of that. So that's as far as I'm up to, so I'm probably a couple of days behind about what's happening there. But, yeah, it was sounding quite positive, really.
Okay, so that's a possibility, and as you say, we've got this select committee process to try to, you know, to put our points there, and also the transition board.
Yeah, now my understanding from City Council staff is that the LTCCP, the Long-Term Community Council Plan, has been to the board. The waste issue, the Waiheke waste issue, has also been to the board. The Transition Agency Board. And they are now, they've asked council for some further information about the Waiheke issue and haven't made any sort of declarations around it so far.
Is it too late, though? I mean, we've got, you know, I mean, Cleanstream have had to pack up shop.
No, it's not too late. I mean, I think what it comes down to is the decision-making process. My perception of what happened with the decision-making process is that right from the start it's been completely flawed. And I think, yes, Cleanstream are out of the site, but I don't think that's got much to do with it, really. From my point of view, it's not even about the contractors anymore. It's actually about the community being able to make a decision, and the community board being shut out of it, and the desires of what our community wants and our approach to sustainability being ridden roughshod over by bureaucrats in Auckland.
Now, there seem to be two targets for the ongoing protest and concern around the waste management. So we've got TPI and trying to pressure them to put in decent waste management and recycling initiatives, and also the continued pressure on council. Which do you think is the most important?
Well, given that I'm the councillor, I guess my thing would be about putting it on the council. But I think both strategies are important. If you think back to my experience my background is that for 6.5 years I was the educator for the Waste Resource Trust, so it's something I really care passionately about, you know, about our community reducing our waste. So on a personal level, yes, I think we do need to be engaging with TPI to ensure that they're that the fantastic inroads that we've made in reducing our waste, that those achievements are not lost. So I do agree with that strategy. But then on the other side, I also think we need to be pressuring council, because the decision making process has been so shonky, and also it's been very clear from our community that we wanted to maintain a community owned service. You know, that's delivered really good outcomes for all of us here in terms of our waste reduction. So both strategies are important.
Okay, now the other thing that's happened, of course, is we've got the tenure plan. Now we've got also the decision coming through on the Matiatia, the transport and redevelopment plan down there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people had thought that had basically fallen off the radar and was something we didn't have to worry about, but it's risen again.
Yeah, well, what's come through there, Chris, is that basically there was a development plan for Matiatia, and I mean, if we, you know, Matiatia is also when I think about it, Matiatia, the council buying that land, they were forced to do that because of community activism, so I hold that up as a success story, and one that gives me hope around the waste issue, really. But it was always in the staff's mind that we had to get, I think $7 million back or something, in terms of, what the council had spent buying it, that they needed to get $7 million return. And the council's idea around that was developing it and flogging off a block of it. But because of the recession, it's actually worked in our favour that basically they've land banked it for, the recommendation is for a minimum of 5 years. But at the same time, there's still things that we need to do down there to improve the transport system. And so that's the thing that's become quite controversial at the moment, is we're back into discussions around what's the primary point of Matiatia, and Waiheke locals always say it's a gateway, it's a transport hub, whereas in town they tend to see it as a destination, I think, and that, hence this whole thing about there's resource constraints there to develop the land, but
does seem to be.
So I don't know where we're going with that at the moment. We're just looking at what council staff have come through with ideas around parking, bus turnarounds, drop-off points, roads, cycleways, footpaths, those sort of issues.
It does seem to be part of the same problem that we have the waste, as though, doesn't it? That what you've got is a council looking at this as, from an Auckland perspective rather than from a Waiheke perspective, because all of those plans around Matiatia are around it being a visitor destination, not about it being a service area for the local community.
Absolutely. I mean, that's been part of the problem all the way through.
And isn't it the same committee?
That I've picked up through my term as councillor.
Is it the same committee that looks at that?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you properly.
Is it the same committee that looks at the transport issue as looks at the waste one? Is our friend Aaron Batniger involved in this as well?
No. No, different lot this time.
Oh, great. Right. But more of the same, I imagine.
Well, actually, I've got to say the only place where I've actually felt like I've been listened to has been the Transport Committee. Ken Bagley's a pragmatist and doesn't have the same sort of ideological drive and barriers to listening to people that you get from people like Councillor Batniger.
Well, so perhaps a little hope there.
Yeah, probably. Ken Bagley is, he'll listen to reason, and as long as you can give him a convincing, credible, cost-effective argument, he's pretty good. The Transport Committee, I'm not sure because the whole Matiatia thing's tied up with this Property Enterprise Board, but I think their bit is over now because of the land banking. There's going to be no development there. Well, not in the foreseeable future anyway. But the Transport Committee needs to be looking at the transport plan for Matiatia. But first off, actually, we've really got to get our community feeding back to the Transport Committee to say, no, we're not happy with this. These are what we think are our priorities.
Mm.
And you're quite right. You know, Waiheke, it is. It's a transport hub, but, you know, it's for the people here who go into work every day and come out every day, as well as the visitors. But from the community's point of view, that's what it is for us.
And one small win amongst all of this misery seems to be that there is a chance that the Select Committee on Auckland Governance may have a hearing on Waiheke.
Yeah, well, and they're actually going to have a sort of a mini committee on Great Barrier as well. And again, this is partially, I think, this is to do with the fact that Waiheke and Great Barrier people put in a lot of submissions. Also because of how we organised around the Royal Commission and put in, you know, like 28% of all the submissions came from the Hauraki Gulf. And then I think the third reason is that our MP, Nikki Kay, has been pushing for it as well, and which I think is a good thing. I think she's been doing a good job for that, for us on those issues.
Yeah, and she also presented the petition on the campaign for fair ferry fares had been circulating. She presented that to Parliament earlier this week.
Yeah, which is great, you know. We check in with each other pretty regularly, actually, just because there's a lot of crossover and sort of issues that we're dealing with. And she was saying around about the petition that there's some things that she has to be pretty careful of, but she's more than happy to advocate on behalf of the Waiheke community. And, I mean, that's a major improvement to what we've had in the past in terms of our MPs.
Okay, and let's just to finish off, just focus in on the community board for a moment. What's the next issues on the agenda for the community board that they're focused on?
I don't know. I haven't had my head around that. Sorry, Chris. Just having had a day off the computer, I really can't answer it. The waste issue is a biggie, of course. There are some issues around. The granddad sand pit thing.
Yep.
We're looking at delegations. We're reviewing that. It's been on the agenda for the last couple of meetings, but the meetings have gone on till 10:30 at night, and nobody's starting to make any sense after that. So it's on the agenda for the next meeting, sort of saying, okay, well, you know, I've got responsibilities for things that I don't think I've ever done. So it's sort of like, okay, well, let's just review and see how well we're doing there. Eileen's the park spokesperson, and Noble Angelo's the tree spokesperson, and Herb's the transport spokesperson. So it's time to actually review it and see whether we're doing okay and if we need assistance or a change around. And we always said at the beginning that we'd do that. So that's a bit of internal stuff, really.
Yeah. So no rest then. Plenty going on.
Sorry, what's that?
There's plenty going on, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and there's always local issues like, you know, Grandad's the input, and, you know, there's always local issues.
That seems to have been going on forever, though. I mean, I've never known a time when people haven't said that there is more being dumped in there than should be, that there aren't problems. Why is it taking so long to raise its head?
It's a good question. I've actually asked that myself from the staff. And, it seemed like there was some issues around monitoring there where it wasn't done appropriately. But I'm still trying to get to the bottom of it.
All right, so keep...
Hey, just before you go, can I just remind people that Cleanstream are having a thank you party today from 4 o'clock down at the Woolshed.
Oh, okay.
And it's free. I think there's a bar. There'll be some nice food. So it starts at 4, and I think we'll be eating around about 6 or 7. So.
Oh, fantastic. It does seem a little bit, though, that the community should be saying thank you to Cleanstream rather than the other way around.
Well, I think it's a thank you to everyone, really. But, you know, the fact that we have had a community organisation for 10 years doing this work is a major achievement, and it won't disappear from sight.
Good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay, well, thank you very much, Denise.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Island Life, brought to you by Placemakers. Know how, can do.
It's time for our monthly catch-up with the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Mark James. They're with me in the studio now. Good morning. Isn't it? Good morning, gentlemen.
It's still morning. Yeah.
That's. I think I had one too many of those ales last night, actually. Feeling a little bit fluffy on it. It's a good time to be a person with an opinion because there are plenty of things to have opinions about.
Well, isn't it funny, though, that we were sitting here last month so short of local stuff to talk about that we resorted to making fun of Richard Wirth and discussing the David Bain trial outcome. And now here we are 4 weeks later and there's all this wonderful local stuff.
Never rains but it pours.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the big issue that everyone's been concerned about and is the waste management thing, you know, because this week we had the handover. TPI took over, though they had to they had their tail between their legs on the first day.
That was good to see.
The demonstration was very interesting. It was very, very much a Waiheke demonstration. There were some very well-wrapped-up people had turned up there from very early. They had the gates firmly chained shut. And, of course, the bus driver was chained to it, I assume voluntarily. He seemed to be okay with it. There were, however, the usual thing of those people playing drums. Why do they have to do that?
I don't know. It is a Waiheke thing, isn't it? You hear these drums resonating down the valley. So.
Yeah, annoys me, I must admit. But,
especially at 6:30 in the morning, maybe.
Yeah, but then I'm just a grumpy bugger.
Yeah,
I'm sure their heart's in the right place.
Yeah, we had drums, we had flags.
Yes.
We had car horns.
Car horns.
I must admit I thought the Maori flag was misplaced.
Someone lost it?
No, it was. I think it was its use at the demonstration was probably a bad idea.
Right.
I think it devalued it. The protest was not about Maori issues, and I think the Maori flag was probably shouldn't have been there.
But it seems that the point was well made. There was good
it
national
was
coverage, and of course we don't want to stop. Of course,
no. The interesting thing was I was talking to Greg Treadwell at the demonstration, and we were looking at some of the placards that people had put up, which were great. And Greg suggested that the placard that was probably missing was one that said, "You really don't get how serious we are about this."
Yeah, we're good at that, aren't we? We're good at just saying, "No" is the wrong answer. And we'll keep going until you change that answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, I have heard it said that there are plans of some people to drop their recyclables off, washed, cleaned and sorted at the council just to demonstrate, you know, this is what we want. So rather than have TPI pick it up and throw it all in together and ship it off to Onehunga, there's a
to be just a plan on of, the mountain there.
Yeah, people are saying, well, we're going to demonstrate to you what we want. We want the council to take responsibility for properly sorting our recyclables. And,
well, I was interested to note down at the demonstration on Wednesday morning that they were doing the old blow your horn if you support this, and various council employees in their expensive council vehicles were driving past and making a point of hooting. Well, too late, guys. If you work for the council, you're part of the problem.
I imagine that those people who work at the service centre, you know, and are Waiheke residents who are just as concerned about this as you know, the rest of us are. I don't know if we can blame the people at the service centre for Aaron Batnicker.
Well, true. No, we probably can't. I'll just go ahead and blame them for a whole lot of other stuff. I think the service centre should be bulldozed.
Well, it's going to be, isn't it?
Good. Can we make sure all the staff are in it when that happens?
The 10-year plan is out and saying, well, despite multiple rounds of consultation and outcomes that clearly say that people want a separate service centre and library, guess what? We're going to slump them both together in Oniroa. So we got that news this week. Now, let's get back to this waste management. Of course, we've got ongoing protest. And we've got this talk of a judicial review.
Yes.
That's interesting.
That really will be curious. Because, of course, the thing about the whole issue is the smell of rat is getting richer and stronger all the time. And I think if I was Councillor Batnagar, I would be a little concerned right now. I reckon that guy must be quite worried. It looked like a standard piece of sleaze as usual at the council. And, you know, obviously, one of the things I think we have to tackle here is for young people who are really concerned about seeing the fact that the process is clearly being subverted. So if the kid asks you, you know, "Daddy, is democracy broken?" I think you have to sort of explain to them that, you know, well, when an executive from a large multinational company and an amenable local councillor love each other very much, they sort of go off in private and they do something, and then, you know, something weird and wonderful happens, and 9 months later a piece of corrupt legislation is born. And everyone lives happily ever after except the ratepayer, but and then, of course, they don't matter, do they?
Now, what about you, Mark? Do you smell a rat in this, or do you just think this is a big city?
How can you not smell a rat in this? I mean, this is so blatantly, it was so blatantly rigged from the beginning. Complete with, oh, let us pause for a while we consider whether the super city is really going to override our decision here. And then a week later they say, no, it's not. We've decided. We've considered. And that was so orchestrated, so obviously orchestrated. What I'm really interested in is this idea of a judicial review, not because I think it will actually succeed, but because it will put the fear of bankruptcy into TPI and its shareholders and its creditors.
And which already exists anyway.
Well, exactly, and it's going to worsen it. What TPI really wanted out of this was a long-term contract with a lot of money coming in so that they could show their shareholders, look, we're coming back from our depths. And to have this threat of a judicial review over them and an obviously hostile public in this very area where they thought they had just secured a $21 million contract, that has to make people think, have second thoughts about whether TPI is a viable enterprise. Good.
And I think both TPI and the council are probably furiously shoving documents through the shredder right now.
Yeah, well, let's talk about...
Because these are the sort of things that I think they did not expect to have examined in really close detail. And I think if the paper trail is put together, someone's going to look very dubious over this.
Well, let's look at that paper trail, because there is a letter, and not much has been made of this, and I'm kind of surprised by that. Now, this letter, just to let listeners know what it says here. So this was sent from the Bledisloe building in Auckland, Wellesley Street. We don't know who sent it. It was sent to a guy called Charlie Clements, and it says this. It goes, Charlie Clements had obviously carried out a review on waste management services on Waiheke Island. The review in the letter says, "Hi Charlie, we've reviewed the draft document you sent on the current services. We need some clarification on points." Then it goes on to say, "What we're aiming to achieve is to use this report as a sound business case for our council to approve the change of services on the island. This will be controversial, so the report needs to be tight and cover all bases from all parties that will be involved." So what we've got there, and that's, now we've got a, I think we've got a date, March 2008. So March 2008, we've got this letter saying, you know, our council wants to change the service on Waiheke.
In other words, it was an already, it was a fait accompli, and the purpose of the report was to justify it.
And we've got it there in black and white. Now, it seemed all through this process that what was very, very obvious, you know, we had, there was that letter, there was the fact that the figures in the council material were wrong, and they just would not accept it. They would not change it.
Yep. We've made our minds up. And I mean, maybe it was too late. Maybe the money given as an inducement had already been spent.
Well,
somebody's enjoying a new yacht.
And the wheelie bin's already bought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I would be interested, actually, and I don't know if anyone has, to look to see whether there's any connection between TPI and the suppliers of the wheelie bins.
I'm sure there was.
And, you know, I think that's probably another thing we need to be digging into. This has got a ship of rats, this thing. Right, so what else have we got going on? Of course, we've got the new supermarket.
Well, isn't it interesting? The fire at the supermarket happened just after we'd got on here last month, and... Mark said to me the next day, he said, "Oh, what a shame that couldn't have happened last week and we could have talked about that one." I found it interesting that, true to form, Woolworths Supermarket couldn't even burn down properly. Like everything else down there, it was half-hearted and didn't work quite right. Oh, well, the flammable material didn't actually turn up. We had a problem with the suppliers or somebody didn't order it. But it was certainly noticeable because I lived just over the hill from there. And with the way the fire spread up the wall, the first thing to burn was all that embarrassing, cheap Chinese plastic tat that they have lined up along the tops of the cold cabinets. all that stuff so badly made even the warehouse wouldn't stock it, which Woolworths seem obsessed with offering to us, even though we're not interested. And I was pleased to see that was the first to burn, though God knows what toxins that released into the atmosphere. It was pretty smelly.
Yeah, it was a mess, but a quick turnaround has to be said.
Yes, they certainly got back in business. I mean,
suddenly decided that it was okay to sell food over the internet on Waiheke.
Yes,
it wasn't that interesting.
Yeah, and they pulled that very quickly because that was popular. People liked that.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you shop online?
No, I have tried to avoid Woolies in any form.
Yes, it's back. It's very confusing, very cramped in there at the moment.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's some excuse for that.
Yeah, there's only half of it there. What I do find is strange is why they feel the need to have security guards stomping around the place and a truly Orwellian number of cameras in there. What do they think is going to happen?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually been since they've reopened, but I have heard that there are a lot of cameras. And yeah, you were saying, yeah, security guards there. I mean, what is going on? Is it maybe the building's less secure now than it was?
Well, yeah, I guess it probably is. There's open bits at one end. It's probably easy enough to get through. But why the security guards are walking around in the open part of the supermarket at the moment, I don't know. It gives the place rather a sinister feel.
Mm. And, of course, we've got security guards here for TPI as well. We've got if only they hired local, then we'd probably be
Yeah, wouldn't it be lovely? Yeah, it's interesting that we suddenly need all these security guards to protect us from whatever it is that we think we need protecting from.
Yeah. Well, an interesting thing I found out the other day, talking about Progressive, which I didn't know before, was that Progressive owned Dick Smith. And, of course, on the island, Golf Sound and Vision have been a Dick Smith outlet. You know, you've been able to actually, I got myself a very good external hard drive at a very good price there the other day because
Golf Sound and Vision, great shop.
You know, they were able to sell at Dick Smith prices. But the Dick Smith or Progressive are pulling back on that, and they're only going to have their own brand stores. So Golf Sound and Vision is no longer, as of Wednesday, a Dick Smith reseller.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, and that's Progressive, again, who are behind Woolworths, of course. But the good news is that they have gone into partnership with some other people. I think they're reselling J-Car products now. So they're determined still to be able to provide a good service to the island. So,
yeah, because that is a great shop for getting your technological stuff.
It sure is, yeah. Yeah. Now, what else were we going to discuss this morning? The supermarket? The waste management? I'm sure there was something else on our list.
Blimey, I can't think of anything.
It's gone in a haze of ale.
Yes.
Here we go.
Well, I've got a comment about the supermarket. There have been a number of letters in the Gulf News and other places suggesting that the absence of Woolworths might make us look again at alternatives to Woolworths and might give us shopping patterns that include other stores than Woolworths. And while that would be a really good thing if it happened, let me tell you why it probably won't happen. I went into a local store, I guess I won't mention its name on the radio, but I went to a local store where the previous week they had sold a loaf of bread for, I guess it was $4.50. And the week after the fire occurred, that same loaf of bread was $5.50. And I felt gouged. And that, you know, to me, that I'm sure that store made a lot of money that particular week or 2 weeks, but they lost, you know, they lost my business, and I suspect they may have lost a number of people's business because they felt gouged. And what does that say about our ability to support alternatives to Woolworths? I just thought it was sad.
But on the other hand, it has opened the eyes of people to some of the local shops. You know, Steve the Butcher, of course, has had a huge influx of customers.
That's a good thing.
And, you know, so people are discovering, hey, we don't have to buy, you know, stuff which is packaged up, shipped over from town. We've got a local guy doing a good job and we can shop there.
And I think also, I mean, one of the great weaknesses of Woolworths has always been their fruit and vegetables. Very often you'll go in there and half the fruit and vegetables are halfway to being compost. Whereas now
TPI could ship them off to an island and turn them into mulch.
Just cut out the middleman, just take the whole lot and just turn it into compost.
Yeah, so they could come over on the barge, go straight to TPI, go straight back on the barge, be turned into mulch and come back again.
Mm, and then be sold to us. But it's certainly noticeable that the crew that do the fresh fruit and vegetables down at the market, the stuff is a lot fresher and nicer than it is at Woolworths.
Yeah, so there has been some good come out of it. And Woolworths very quick to jump up and say, yeah, it's a shame that burnt down, but wait for the new supermarket we're going to build.
Yeah, well, they've been saying that for
that for ages. And the fact is, even if you open a new supermarket, you've still got the same problem. That who's going to work in it? The existing supermarket is bad because they don't have enough staff. They've never got enough staff. They might as well have help wanted permanently etched above the door. So opening a new supermarket is not going to change that. They'll still be paying minimum wage, and they'll still won't be able to get enough people to work in there.
Yeah, I don't know. They were trumpeting it, saying 18 months. Well, we'll see, won't we?
Mm.
Yeah, they've been. This is not the first time they've made a prediction like that, and those predictions so far have never come true. So, I, for one, am not going to hold my breath.
Well, of course, if you want something run through, and here's just a little note to you, Progressive. If you want to get anything done on the island, go and see Councillor Bhatnagar. I understand he's very amenable. Might cost you another yacht or something, but I'm sure he'll fix you up.
There we go. That's the Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Mark James, joining us again, as they do on the first Saturday of every month here on Island Life. With me now is Di from the library. And just turn my headphones up there, that's better. Good morning, Di, how are you?
Good morning.
Right, it's a busy time for you, isn't it, with the school holidays. The school went out yesterday for 2 weeks.
Yeah, we take a big breath, and there's a busy time in the library for the school holidays. So yeah, day one today, but we're ready. So as usual, we take part in the Auckland City Libraries, you know, system-wide program. And the theme for the July holidays is my family. And I'm really enthused about this one because it's fascinating to study your family. And often with a nuclear family now, people don't realise what their history is and their genealogy. So kind of even dabbling into that at a primary school level, which is the children that we aim for with our holiday program, it's going to be interesting. Having conversations with mum and dad, or if you've got a nana somewhere or an auntie, and just ask the questions about where you've come from and where's your family come from, and have I got a family name, and what does that mean? And it's just, and I think it's really, it's lovely to know where you come from in a simple way. And I know a little bit about my family history, not a lot, but it gives me a sense of belonging and a sense of, like, you know, I'm special because this is my line behind me. So we were just really trying to inspire the children to get a hold of that. And we've got there's one competition that they can join in with, and that's to create their own family crest, you know, which is that emblem of, you know, like the one that it's not my family, but it's my husband's family, the Stoddart crest. And I've got that on display in the library, and every family has this emblem of what represents them. And so we're going to get the children to just create, you know, in a fantasy kind of way, a lovely emblem for their family. So there's templates for that, and there's things on at the library as well. So we're going to have, you know, we always have the two Wednesdays. The children come in for an hour at 11 o'clock, and I thought what would be really cool would be to have a speaker each Wednesday, and they are a fascinating person, so they've got a huge story to tell about where they've come from, how do they get to Waiheke, a little bit about their family, a couple of really funny, sort of interesting stories from their childhood, you know, because these are older people. So it'll be interesting for the children to hear all of that. So that starts off the program on the Wednesday, and then there's the craft and activities. And for this Wednesday, it's making a lovely photo frame, so that, and if they bring along a photo, it could be of themselves, but it might be of a great-great-great-great-grandfather or something. So to do that, and then they're going to also look into their family trees the next week and figure out, you know, just ask those questions, and who's my granddad and who's my great-granddad and all of that.
So I suppose in a way you're trying to teach people really a little bit about the library and its resources and how they can be used, and it's not just about going and sitting on the beanbag and getting a couple of your favourite books out.
That's right, because we're going to be having a stash of name, origins of name books available this week, and so people can look through that and find out what the meaning of their name is. And that in itself is going, oh, you feel quite special when you know what the meaning of your name is. So my family is, my dad's side's Norwegian and my mum's side kind of starts off, it's Irish and it's English and there's a whole mixture there, and then there's a little bit of French stuff happening in there where the Huguenots were involved, and so, yeah, and I know that the Norwegian side came over on a boat, and I knew that, and I know that sort of mid-1800s and where they went to live in Norsewood. And we've been to see the graves, you know, the gravestones. So it's, it's just really fascinating. And I think the children will hopefully get a hold of the idea and really do some of their own research as well once they get going.
Good stuff. And so what are the times and for all of that stuff?
So the program does run over the whole holiday. So there's a little pack. So if you want to come in and receive your pack, which will take you through the holidays, which has got activities and the competition in it. So that's going the whole time. But if you come in on those two Wednesdays, so it's Wednesday the 8th and then Wednesday the 15th at 11 o'clock, we have the actual special program where we have the guest storyteller and activities as well for that hour. So, yeah, it's usually really popular. And, of course, we always say now that it's free. And it's always been free, of course, but I think in these times when it's times might be a little bit more difficult, it's really, we're finding that the library's getting used a lot more. So I think, yeah, come along and join in with the other children.
Well, on that topic of free, I mean, I'll just throw this one at you. Sorry, I haven't prepared this. We didn't talk about this, but I mean, there is a bit of talk at the moment, isn't there? You know, we've got a review of local government going on, and the Minister for Local Government, Rodney Hyde, has talked about, you know, libraries pulling back to core services, and it doesn't seem like he's including libraries in those core services, you know, when he's talking about water roading and so on.
Yes.
And this is something which has been mooted in the past, hasn't it, the idea of having an element of user pays in the library system.
Yeah, so there is an element of that already, of course, because people have, you know, there are fines that you need to pay.
Oh, yeah, I know about those. Yeah.
So, and that's a revenue that they're very reluctant to let go of, and, you know, and we have to pay a dollar for a book if you want to get a book that's not on your own shelves. So that revenue is still there. And, you know, the reduction of charges on DVDs or CDs is another possibility that's often in discussion, or having at least children's DVDs free, you know. So that's, I think it's probably an ongoing discussion. There is a library system down in Taranaki that, you know, the council is incredibly supportive of, and they don't have any charges. There's no overdue fines or anything.
Wow.
So they honour the role of the library in the community, as of course our council does as well. But it's we have a huge system. I mean, we've got the biggest system in New Zealand, so I guess it needs supporting in some way.
Yeah. Are you aware of any other local systems or other libraries in the country where they are charging for, you know, just for, say, lending of books?
I'm not sure what other systems do, actually, to tell you the truth. Don't know. I can't answer that question, really. Yeah.
Okay, so that's something for people to keep an eye on anyway, isn't it, in the future months?
Yeah, so it was confirmed, it was in the paper this week, that it was confirmed, you know, in the 10-year plan, I think, that, yes, Waiheke's library's going ahead, the new one, and there's two other libraries on the mainland, but their timelines are further down the track, so we are fortunate that ours has not been booted down 5 years away, and the completion date's kind of, 11-12, which is not that far away. So it is exciting for us to have a purpose-built library, and, you know, the usage of it all around the world is, you know, libraries are getting used more as the recession hits, and there's like 20% increase in people using them. So, yeah, they are a cool service, like you said before. And people are not buying books like they used to. You know, the people that would go, oh, I just buy all my books. And we actually had a patron in yesterday who commented about that. You know, it's like, I can't buy books anymore. And so she buys the very odd special one, but then she just comes to the library and borrows.
The amount I pay in fines, I may as well buy them. All right, that's Dia Stoddard from Waiheke Library. Thank you very much for popping in this morning.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, cheers. You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues.
Island Life is brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. And we replay the interviews on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. Or you can download these interviews from our website, www.waihikiradio.org.nz.